Hello and welcome to MLW Confusion. I'm your host, Rob Cameron, bringing you all that you may or may not need to know about Major League Wrestling and its television programming. This week, we have MLW Fusion 133 Tag Team Ladder Match main event tonight. But first, we got some news coming out of Super Fight. Next week, February 26th, in the Grady Cole Center in Charlotte, North Carolina, we have MLW Super Fight. We have a batch of news coming out of this event. Matches, debuts, returns, and whatnot. Most notably, the Puma King is making his return at Super Fight. In addition, we have the debut of the new mini Abismo Negro. I bring these up together without adding extra thoughts because they will be taking part in a trios match. It'll be Gino Medina, Mini Abismo Negro, and Ares taking on the Puma King, Octagon Jr., and a mystery opponent. So even as we speak, MLW Azteca is bleeding into the primary programming, bringing in some luchadores, new and old, into the fold. Excited to see this. Excited to see what a mystery person is going to be. And though I will say, just to be different, I hope it's not Aramis, because as much as I love seeing Aramis and Ares go back and forth, like we've seen it a handful of times already in MLW, let's just switch things up. I don't know. Maybe they'll bring in another mini and do one of those fancy things that I can't remember the technical term, but sometimes in Lucha Libre, they'll do a multi-man match or like a trios match at Atomicos or something of the like, and they just like teams consists of one person from each division, so you'll have just a traditional luchadore, you'll have a mini, you may have a female, and an exotico, all teaming up on teams going, you know, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 4-on-4, whatever, on each other, and that, like, that actually would be mildly amazing to me. But, you know, I'm not Cecil Duran. I am not Ricky Steamboat, guest booker for this show. I'm just a dude hanging out in my hot tub filled with pizza rolls in my mother's basement, screaming into the void or a microphone. And it's the internet, so it's probably about the same thing. Anyway, never mind that. Lucha Libre action. A trios match with a big debut, big return, etc. Let's move along from there. Also announced for Super Fight, Alex Shelley will be taking on Richard Holiday with Alicia Atute. A solid matchup to be had there. We're going to see Richard Holiday come back into his old ways, I assume, and we'll be interested to see how Alicia makes herself known during this match as well. And of course, it's always a pleasure seeing Alex Shelley in action. Can't stress that chunk enough either. And last but not least, we got Family Clashes. It is the Von Erichs, Ross and Marshall, taking on the debuting Kerry and Ricky Morton at Super Fight. Von Erichs, obviously, former MLW World Tag Team Champions. Ricky Morton, formerly of the Rock and Roll Express, has been training his son for a bit now, and they're looking to make their MLW debut at Super Fight, so that should be fun to see, too. Second generation, third generation wrestlers going at it. Father and son teaming together, taking on a team of brothers. You gotta love it. Or I guess you don't gotta, but I think it's fun nonetheless. Anywho, alright, it is time to take a look at MLW Fusion episode 133. It is time for the show to start. We have Rich Bocchini and Joe Dombrowski welcoming us to the show. Joe brings out Calvin Tankman. Before Tankman can say much of anything outside that he has the opportunity to get his hands on Alex Kane, the Suplex Assassin and his associate, Mr. Thompson, comes out. We got the full Bomae Fight Club out. And referees are just instantly out, keeping the two separated. But it doesn't stop Tankman from getting a cheap shot in on Kane. And it had to be satisfying for Tankman. So we got a brief interaction there, but nothing else comes to it. Kane walks away. The referees keep the two separated, so there isn't anything further to be had. following this, we have a recap of last week's shocking turn. And if you missed it, I mean, where were you, man? Like, you had to have been, like, under a rock or something, because the Dynasty is now, primarily a solo act. Richard Holiday takes out Alexander Hammerstone. Alicia turns heel, hitting Hammer in the dick with a microphone. Tonight, we will get Truth or Tryst, the Valentine's date between Holiday and Alicia Toot. Allegedly, they will be explaining things for what happened and the whys of it. But first, of course, we need to get in-ring action, because that's what we're here for. Solid in-ring action. We have ACH making his return to MLW, taking on number one contender for the World Heavyweight Championship, Davey Richards. Match starts off with some solid back-and-forth action. The two competitors trade holds, going back and forth, get some near falls in there as well. Richards takes over for a bit after a kitchen sink knee strike. Richards ends up in this process, locks on a really interesting variation of a surfboard, using like a trailer hitch leg lock in addition to the arm hold, and doesn't really hold as a submission for terribly long before turning it into a pinfall. He gets a two count on that, but that was rather interesting, I thought. Richards goes for a brainbuster early on, or at least way too early for it to be effective. ACH knees his way out of that and starts a spirit battle. The spirit battle really just kind of wakes ACH up after, falling unconscious after enziguring Richards. But he wakes up, takes control, culminating in a deadlift German suplex for two. The two competitors trade roll-up attempts before ACH locks on the cloverleaf. Battle on the ring apron that sends ACH out down the clash ramp, which I love, by the way. Can't stress how much I love clash ramps. Anywho, ACH just charges back into the ring and hits a diving cutter from the outside inside, then hits a frog splash, but only gets a two count out of that. We go to commercial, we come back, ACH is on the top rope, Davey Richards cuts him off with a lots and lots and lots of brain-rattling, CTE-inducing headbutts before hitting the superplex for a two count, rolls that into an ankle lock, into a PK kick, we get a brainbuster, two count, ankle lock, with stomps before ACH finally taps. And that was a whole lot of like fluid movement there at the end. But Davey Richards is your winner. Number one contender, still looking strong. Solid match between the two competitors. I'm not always the biggest fan of ACH, but I would be remiss if I thought he couldn't go in the ring. And this is another case of him being able to go in the ring. A solid match between the two of them. A good way to start the show off, get people's blood pumping. Even though really, honestly, like it was a foregone conclusion that Richards had to win this match. I mean, he's the number one contender. And if he wasn't going to win, it had to be via shenanigans. Obviously, there were no shenanigans. Davey Richards won. Tap out. After the ring fall, I don't know where I was going with the ring aspect of it, but afterwards, Rich Bocchini has the microphone. He goes to get a word with Richards, asks a couple of questions, and Richards just kind of like blows him off. He's like, I'm in Texas. This is between family, and takes the mic and just wanders off back into the ring. Gets on. He talks a little bit about losing the Opera Cup and pretty much just, you know, runs down whoever did it. It's something you earn. Hope they feel good about themselves. They're going to need a cup by the time he gets his hands on them, though. So I guess he's going to kick them in a dick, which, whatever, I'm down to see. Not enough dick kicks in wrestling. Anywho, he also thanks ACH for being such a stellar opponent and, you know, puts over Texas as a place to grow great competitors like ACH. He ends his little promo with calling the confrontation between himself and Alexander Hammerstone destiny, that they're two guys cut from the same cloth, you know, not interested in fame, not interested in the money, just looking to be the best wrestlers in the world. Anywho, the hunt is on. Awoo. Okay, he didn't actually howl this time. I was kind of surprised. So, but you know, so one of us had to awoo, so it might as well have been me, right? That's how this works. Okay, good. We're agreed. All right, moving on. Moving on. Oh, we get a promo from Mads Kruger. He is ready to finish off Jacob Fatu. He notes that there will be a river of blood to be bathed in, and Kruger will drown Fatu in that river of blood. We then move on to Mr. Saint Laurent hanging out with Cesar Duran in Duran's office. Saint Laurent's really putting over his new charge, which my sources still tell me is Joe Hennig. So he's also really sucking up to Cesar Duran in the process of it all, too. And Cesar's like, cool, what a better way to debut someone than in a trios match. So it looks like the mystery person from the trios match earlier will probably be Mr. Saint Laurent's mystery person there. And, well, as we're going over this, mulling it around, running that over her tongue, Wild Myron Reed appears and interrupts. He's really wanting a rematch for his middleweight championship that he lost to Tajiri. Cesar's impressed. He likes it when his fighters kind of take charge of the situation, but also thinks it's only apropos that since Myron Reed lost the middleweight championship in a multi-man match, that he has to regain it in a multi-man match. So it looks like we got Tajiri, we got Myron Reed, and then another mystery opponent. So maybe that's Mr. Saint Laurent's mystery guy too. I don't know, but I'm pretty sure Cesar like explicitly talked about the trios match to be had on that front. But Reed's all down with it. As long as he's getting his title shot, he is content. From here, we get the news. Well, get the news again that Killer Cross is returning to MLW. But really, bigger shocks, bigger news is Leo Rush, who hasn't been seen, you know, in like 6 months or so, is back with MLW. He will be making his return soon, according to our promo. And speaking of things that are going on soon, we have our calendario of events. It is next week, Jacob Fatu versus Mads Kruger in a grudge match. On February 26th, it is Super Fight from North Carolina, Charlotte to be exact. There it will be a double shot at the end of March. March 31st is Intimidation Games. And then on April Fool's Day, MLW Azteca returns as well. I believe these are both out of Texas. And last but not least, in Philadelphia, we have Kings of Coliseum on May 13th of this year. So I got some big things coming up here in the next couple of months. But you know what else is kind of a big thing? Energy drinks. So I'm going to take a pause for the cause, let you guys get some deal on some energy drinks, maybe some workout stuff. I don't know. I don't work out. So go ahead and do that. And I'll be back un momento.
Now, whether you're someone who works out or, like me, needs to maintain focus and mental clarity, we could all use a pick-me-up. That's where Raise Energy steps in. With Refresh technology, Raise provides a hydrating, sugar-free boost of energy without the crash some other energy drinks have. You can find out where you can get Raise Energy near you by visiting www.repsports.com. And while you're there, check out the other products that Rep offers, such as pre- and post-workout supplements and snacks. And if you want some extra savings, order online and apply my discount code CASS, that's C-A-S-S, at checkout for 15% off your order.
All right, we get a debuting tag team of Bud Heavy and Gnarls Garvin. They will be taking on All Japan Pro Wrestling Saito Brothers. But before the match can start, we get it kind of a meeting of the minds. We get to see how the Bud Heavy Gnarls Garvin team forms. Garvin's reintroducing himself to the crowd because it's been quite a bit since we've really seen Garvin. Talks about how he likes to fight, how he'll fight anyone. Hey, he found the Moon Man too. Uncle Moon Man is back with the company too, just hanging out in the parking lot. Garvin also notes that he, in addition to fighting, he likes to drink beer, and MLW's promised him an unlimited beer budget. And he finds Bud Heavy like in a garbage bag. And he's like, oh, no. You've already beat me. He's like, yeah. I beat you. So what else is there to do? And Heavy's like, I like drinking beer too. And Gnarls is like, I don't much like you, but I like drinking beer. That sounds like a great idea. So they have a beer, and now they're best friends and tag team partners, I guess. So, I mean, that's how it works in real life. But they'll be taking on a set of brothers, twins to be exact, and the Saito brothers, Rei and Jun. They're making waves in All Japan Pro Wrestling. Evidently, have taken to the sport quite naturally. They've only been in the business a touch over a year. And so they've done quite well for themselves in the tag division. But this is kind of like their first real appearance in the United States. So let's see how that works out for them. It looks like it's Gnarls and Jun to start. They got a lot of striking back and forth. Bud gets tagged in and goes for some offense too. And the thing that's going to like kind of annoys me already is that at least Jun Saito is not a fan of selling. I mean, he'll like wobble and like, but like he won't fall down like after a couple of like big strikes, like Gnarls Garvin dropkick. And I'm sorry for the sidebar here, but it just really kind of strikes me as odd. Like, I don't know. He kind of like reminds me kind of like Inoki in his selling. Like he won't go down, but he'll wobble all over the place. The thing is, though, like neither of the Saito brothers are that big. Like they're good sized dudes. Like don't get me wrong. Like they're a bit bigger than your average guy, but they're really not that big in professional wrestling terms. And then they're, I mean, really when compared to Bud and Gnarls, they're really not that big either. Commentary puts over that they're both about 6'3", and they're probably, you know, at least a good 250 or so. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. They are, you know, met them on the street. You'd say they're big, you know, good sized dudes, but their opponents are also like pretty big dudes. They're just not as tall, but they're thick. I mean, that's kind of like Bud Heavy is heavy, and Gnarls is just, you know, a big thick bruiser. Really, he's just not 6'3". So that kind of like took me out of things for a moment. But that's that sidebar aside. This is really like kind of an exhibition. Once Bud gets in there, Bud Heavy, because he's kind of a jobber. He's a popular jobber, but he's a jobber nonetheless. So, you know, the Saitos are kind of getting their stuff in on Heavy. We got some tags, you know, just lots of striking, slow plotting offense by the Saitos. I got distracted by thinking about selling. Anyway, we get the hot tag. Bud does get a tag out of Gnarls, and he's a house of fire, just acted like a wrecking ball, came in like a wrecking ball, comes in like Miley Cyrus, and just takes everybody out. The Saitos actually fall down for Gnarls. And despite how awesome Gnarls is doing, he tags in Bud, which leads to a malfunction at the junction as Bud and Gnarls collide. Double choke slam on Bud before Rei hits a diving splash for the 1-2-3. After the match, though, the Saitos don't get much of the chance to celebrate as Gnarls sends them packing with strikes. And I'm gonna throw it out there, like, that this match did next to nothing for me. Like, don't get me wrong, like, I prefer my match pacing be a touch on the slower side, unless it's just some crazy brawl or possibly some lucha action. But like, I think the problem is I need to go like do my research on it and check out like the size, like the physical size of the All Japan roster, because the Saitos wrestled like they were giants. Again, tailoring it back in to what I was complaining about earlier, that the Saitos wrestled like they were giants, but they were, one, not giants by any stretch of the imagination, and two, like they, like, really, like, when you throw in just the sheer mass of it, like, they really weren't any bigger than Bud or Gnarls. Like, I'm all for a tandem chokeslam or whatnot, but, like, it was just, like, two plodding, slow guys wrestling a style that, like, physically didn't make sense. Like, I don't know, it would just be, like, me coming in and going after somebody and decided, like, I am a giant, when really, like, I'm just, like, 3 inches taller than the person I decided to choke slam. And then I have to run away because that's a terrible idea on my part. So, like, that really brought down the match. So the match really didn't do anything for me, despite the odd couple pairing of Gnarls and Bud. And I'll say, like, what I'm seeing of Gnarls, like, I'm, you know, impressed. I think he's neat. But this match just didn't do anything, because obviously it was meant to show off the Saitos, and I wasn't buying what they were selling or not selling, by the way. All right, enough complaining about that. Let's go complain about things like love. We finally get the Alicia Toot, Richard Holiday, Valentine's date. They're having champagne, there's chocolates, there's roses, and a lot of Richard Holiday monologues, which, I mean, it really isn't a bad thing. The dude can talk, so I'm okay with that. But he really puts over that, you know, he had everybody fooled. Like, he fooled everyone so well that he almost fooled himself in the process of thinking, making Hammer think that him and Holiday were best friends. Holiday, like, almost believed in himself. But, you know, best friends don't leave each other behind. And that's what he views Hammer did. Like, Holiday thinks he was always there for Hammer, especially during Hammer's feud with Cesar Duran. And really, like, he's got a point. Like, yeah, Hammer got beat up, but, like, Richard was there to bail him out. And whenever Holiday got beat up, like, there wasn't a Hammer to be found, you know, or at least not directly, or he took a sweet time. Like, I mean, yeah, there's a couple times where Hammer helped out a bit, but really, like, Holiday took the brunt of those beatings without much aid. So, I mean, yeah, the heel isn't supposed to be right, but Holiday's kind of right on this. But he tailors it back. He brings it back towards the World Heavyweight Championship, and he basically just flat out says that if anyone can beat Hammerstone for the title, it's going to be Holiday, because Holiday knows Hammer better than Hammer knows himself. He knows Hammer's weaknesses, and he's already living in Hammerstone's head rent-free. From this little attraction, we switch gears, go to the Super Fight Control Center, getting some updated news for the Super Fight. Once again, our main event for that show is Davey Richards versus Alexander Hammerstone for the MLW World Heavyweight Championship. We have a guest matchmaker for the evening is in Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Killer Cross is returning at this point, and we'll also get a grudge match between Enzo and Casey Navarro. Back in the realm of MLW, in Cesar Duran's office, Davey Richards and Alexander Hammerstone are there hanging out. They are going to sign a contract for their fight at Super Fight. But before any ink is made to paper, Cesar is getting in Hammer's head, daring Hammer to hit him. Davey tries to play peacekeeper when Cesar's like, wow, you seem really confident for a guy who got beat up and lost an Opera Cup. And so now Richards is all teed off and Hammer's playing peacemaker. Cesar's then just like, yeah, that's great. We got two very distracted guys who are wrestling for my world championship. You guys really need to be focusing on each other instead of your petty little squabbles in the meanwhile. We do get pen to paper, though. We have a handshake, though Hammer is reluctant to let go of it. Says some things that I didn't make out. Audio was mostly terrible. And we have it. So contract signing without a fight. Impressive. Impressive indeed. All right, it is time for our main event of the evening. It is for the MLW World Tag Team Championships in a ladder match. Former champions Los Park, represented by Hijo del LA Park and LA Park Jr., will be taking on 5150 Rivera, Slice Boogie. They're being led to the ring by Julius Smokes and some ladies, because we all love the ladies. Also of note, Hijo de LA Park is dressed like Skeletor, so I hope he did his daily affirmations, because it's going to be a day. Match starts off hot and heavy. We've got a quick brawl before LA Park Jr. is isolated. Though after a brief like double team inside the ring, we pair back off with Rivera and Iho outside the ring, and Jr. and Slice Boogie inside the ring. Jr. moonsaults to the floor, taking everyone out with him, sets up a ladder bridge. After some to-dos and like will they, won't they, eventually Iho spears Slice Boogie onto the ladder, and like he hit it flat. Like I was impressed that the ladder bridge like withstood it, because Slice is a pretty big dude in himself, and then you had another guy in there flying onto the ladder, but like Boogie just hit it flat and like practically didn't move, which probably, I don't know, probably would have hurt worse. I don't know. I don't take ladder bumps, but like I was just impressed that like the ladder barely moved after such an impact. Rivera just shows up and he feels the need to Spider-Man off the ladder. Like he slips off of it, but somehow salvages it. Good on him, because that could have been ugly, but jumps off the ladder, or falls off the ladder, and grabs onto the pillar in the arena. He shimmies up that a little bit before doing a corkscrew off of it and taking out the Park Brothers. We go to commercial break, and when we come back, Slice Boogie power slams Iho onto a ladder in the corner. That looked like it hurt. The Parks isolate Rivera, hitting him with a pop-up German suplex and a big destroyer before taking it outside of the ring with suicide dives and an acai moonsault for good fun there, too. Before too long, Homicide comes out and starts those things, but he's not getting too much done before LA Park comes out. We get a tope suicida slash spear, so he kind of like spears Homicide off the ring apron into the crowd of people below, comes in, gets his taunts in. Unfortunately, there's some do-si-doing in the ring, and Park ends up spearing one of the boys, Iho to be exact, thanks to Homicide dodging the spear. From here, like, weapons get involved, and Homicide takes a shot to the dick, because we haven't had enough of those tonight. In all the chaos, though, we got some shenanigans on the ladder that is won by 5150, we'll say, but at least enough that, you know, 5150 allows Rivera to climb a ladder outside the ring while Slice Boogie grabs Iho, gets him up in the fireman's carry, double stomp, DVD, takes out the Parks long enough for 5150 to climb the ladder and retrieve the World Tag Team Championships. 5150 retain. And, you know, for as much as I dislike the previous match, I did thoroughly enjoy this match. But as I kind of referenced, you know, in one line, like, I enjoy me a wild and crazy brawl, and, like, that's no surprise to anyone who's listened to the show before. Like, the wilder the brawl, the better, and this got pretty wild and woolly. The ladder shots were pretty gnarly on top of it, but really there wasn't a whole lot of, like, actual weapons use overall. Seeing LA Park still be able to do a proper tope suicida, like, one, like, his stomach's pretty big, I'm surprised he fits the ropes, but two, just because he's still agile enough to do it at his age and his size is amazing. So I had fun for this main event, and I liked it to have ended there, but we really have to end the show with a recap of Jacob Fatu and Mads Kruger's feud stemming from War Chamber. And they're finally going to get their hands on each other in an official capacity next week. So that is our show. Two very good matches, and then a match that I didn't care for at all, but, you know, they can't all be zingers. And really, you know, wrestling's subjective. So if you enjoyed it, you know, feel free to just, like, leave a comment calling me stupid. But, like, I won't begrudge you for it, because, you know, that's the beauty of wrestling. It's all subjective. But I enjoyed the other two matches. Love me a brawl at the end. And I can't get enough of LA Park. I will also just throw that out there as well. But with that, we got to end the show. I've talked on for way too long. Stay tuned for the best ways to help support the show. I'd appreciate it. And of course, I appreciate you guys taking your time to listen to me rattle on for pretty near a half an hour every week. So I will take my leave. Thank you all. I will see you all next week. MLW Confusion is a weekly podcast that is written and performed by Rob Kammer and hosted at Anchor FM. The background music for this section is Ruined My Day, performed by Alan Schroeder. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to support, please like, subscribe, and tell your friends, family, and enemies. Leaving a review would also be helpful. Word-of-mouth advertisement, of course, is very important for us small podcasts. For my social media links, they can be found in the description below, but the Twitter and Instagram are both at The Nova of Cass, TheNovaOfCass, and Facebook is at MLW Confusion. If you'd like to support monetarily and help upgrade my equipment, please check out my virtual chip jar at www.kofi.com/Casanova. That is CassOnova. If you'd prefer more bang for your buck, go to patreon.com/Casanova, where for as little as $1, backers get access to the podcast early and without those pesky ads, plus other exclusive content. So head up the crew and join Maverick 45, Alan Schroeder, and Keith Wynn, and check it out. You can also find t-shirts at whatamaneuver.net/collections/theconfusionpodcast. There's hyphens in between the Confusion Podcast, of course. And for other business inquiries, such as ads and sponsorships, please email me at rzkammerer, K-A-M-E-R-E-R, at comcast.net. Thank you all for listening.